Chapter 10, Religion. Bishop Fulton J. Sheen one time proclaimed, "The definition of an atheist, a person with no invisible means of support." Can your God answer the phone? Rummaging through boxes of old photos, letters, newspaper clippings in the basement, I came across a copy of a letter that my mother had written to her parents when I was just 4 in 1943. Here's what she said. "I tried to explain to Ricky some of the things about God. I told him God is everywhere and takes care of him all the time. He thought about it for a few minutes and then said, 'Well, if God takes care of me all the time, why do you get a babysitter when you go out?' Well, that did make God seem ineffectual, so I replied, 'Well, that person is here to answer the phone.' And then Ricky said, 'Well, if God is so great, why can't he answer the phone?' Oh, dear. At 4, I had no idea what God is, or, of course, atheism. Most of my relatives were lightweight Protestants, you know, like Methodists. Speaking of Methodists, a friend who has a master's degree in divinity told me a little joke they had at the seminary. It went like this. Methodists are just Baptists who can read. Presbyterians are just Methodists who went to college. Episcopalians are just Presbyterians who did well on their investments." On the other hand, my mother's mother was a devout Christian Scientist. So I got shuffled off to Sunday school for a few years. I bought into it wholeheartedly, hook, line, and sinker. When I was about 10, I went to a Wednesday evening testimonial meeting in our neighborhood, me and all the blue-haired ladies. At one point, a man about 50 got up and held his arm high in the air. "Last week," he said, "this arm was chopped off in a terrible work accident. I knew the truth about Mary Baker Eddy and her book, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, and my arm grew back." Seriously, everyone seemed to totally believe this miraculous healing story, including me. Toward the end of the meeting, with my heart pounding like a jackhammer, I wanted to give a testimonial too. So I stood up and I said, "Last week, I had a bad cold. I prayed to Jesus and knew that I was made in God's image, and so I could not be sick. It was just my error in thinking, and now my cold is gone." Afterwards, all the blue-haired ladies came over to congratulate me on my fine testimonial. I was so proud. Maybe that's where I got the first idea that this public speaking stuff could be fun. As far as the content is concerned, a few years later in high school biology, I learned about something called the immune system. Maybe God, plus my immune system, had done the job. And a few years later, it dawned on me that it was just the immune system. By the way, statistics show that the Christian Science religion is sinking like a stone. Membership is declining, and churches are closing. Since the 1870s, when religious fanatic Mary Baker Eddy started the whole thing, science and medical practice have made spectacular progress. Medical practice today actually heals people. Religion does not, unless it's psychosomatic. Even there, today we know so much more about the mind-body relationship, which is physical, by the way, not religious. But Christian Science isn't alone in losing members. In 1990, on surveys about religious preference, roughly 10% answered none. By the year 2020, over 26% answer none. The nuns, as the researchers call them, are the largest group in the country, more than Catholics and more than all the Protestant sects together, according to the Pew Research Center. Losing my faith. Since I left home at 18 to go to college, as a virginal Christian Republican, a lot has changed. At first, my question of religion began slowly. Later, it came on like an avalanche, especially after I read a book by Sigmund Freud called The Future of an Illusion. In it, Freud suggests that humans made up God in a desperate hope to find a kind and loving father, you know, like the ones most of us never had. From there, it was all downhill. Today, I proudly boast of being a fire-breathing atheist. Actually, in truth, though, I'm an agnostic. I can't say that God doesn't exist, or what happens when we die. Hell, no one can. Except, of course, the wingnuts and the tin hats. When I see someone with a cross around their neck or hanging from the rearview mirror in their car, I think reflexively, there's a really clueless person. But hey, for all I know, that clueless person could have the right answer, and I could be looking at an eternity in hell. In the meantime, though, call me a born-again atheist. It just sounds cooler. Sexier, even. Chris Brubeck. Speaking of losing faith early, I asked Chris Brubeck about his early religious beliefs. He just saw the contradictions right from the beginning.
Are you religious? Did you have any religious background growing up?
I'm spiritual. I'm so spiritual that I'm not religious.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I remember actually in the hills of Oakland, we had a neighbor who was very religious who would volunteer to take me to church, and my dad would be on tour, and my mom said, well, I guess that wouldn't be so bad. And I remember it got to the part where there was an offering, and I remember people standing up and going, I'm giving $20 in the basket this week because I'm very religious. And I'm thinking, that seems like really weird. I remember this story about Jesus and the moneylenders in the temple. I don't think he was into money. And then I remember hearing about, thou shalt not have graven images unto me. And I'm looking up at this big cross with Jesus hanging there. I said, that sure looks like a graven image unto me. I mean, this is when I'm 4 and 5 years old. Right from the beginning, I was suspicious.
As an adult, I not only was not religious, but I began to grow a sense of resentment about religion. It seems to me that it does so much damage to people. And in addition to all of that, it looked to me as though the coolest people were atheists. Belief and faith seems to me so childish and intellectually untenable. A few years ago, I discovered and joined an organization called the Freedom From Religion Foundation, based in Madison, Wisconsin. The purpose of the organization is to reinforce our Constitution's position on the separation of church and state, not to destroy religion. Most of their 30,000 members, though, are atheists and would probably like to see just that. I also had the honor of interviewing the organization's two co-presidents, Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker. I asked Annie Laurie to share her biggest challenge and her biggest success. She described their legal battle to get rid of the National Day of Prayer.
I want to ask you a question here that has sort of a flip side, two sides of the same coin. One would be, I'd like you to tell me a little bit about the biggest battle you've had, the hardest thing that you've had to deal with. And then the flip side of that would be the biggest success you've had, the thing you're most proud of.
Well, I think they're the same thing.
Okay.
I think the hardest legal fight that the Freedom From Religion ever took was challenging the National Day of Prayer that was passed by Congress as a law in the 1950s at the behest of Billy Graham, and it requires the president to issue an annual proclamation exhorting citizens to pray together in churches and as individuals. And every year the president issues this laundry list of things to pray about. And in the 80s, under Reagan, it went from a floating holiday to the first Thursday in May at the behest of fundamentalists and evangelicals, and they organized around this particular date, and they started a task force called the National Day of Prayer Task Force, so that every governor in the country was getting his or her arm twisted to issue a proclamation, and then they were going to the mayors, and there was supposed to be an event at every state capital, and it made it look like the government was really behind it. Often the government was behind it, and so we sued over this. And we amassed all this evidence of the years of work that it had entailed for FFRF in dealing with complaints from the public and our members over numerous entanglements over the National Day of Prayer, including prayer breakfasts put on by sheriffs and counties and mayors and proclamations that were very religious and had a lot of factual errors about the founding of our country. And we found out that they had read into the congressional record that the reason we needed a national day of prayer is that they prayed when they adopted our secular constitution. And that is a lie. There was no prayer during the four-month constitutional convention. And so we found that this bad law was based on bad history. In our briefings, debunked all of the bad history. And it was very exciting to be able to do that. And then we won at the district level. Judge Barbara Crabb here in federal court in Wisconsin ruled in our favor, and she wrote a lovely 66-page decision saying that it is no more constitutional to require a national day of prayer, where the president tells citizens to get together to pray in churches, than it would be to declare a national day of blasphemy, or to tell citizens that they had to go to sweat lodges, or they had to honor Ramadan. It was a beautifully worded decision. It was a huge decision. It got coverage everywhere, and she got death threats, and we got some, but it was a huge celebration.
They lost that battle at the Circuit Court of Appeals. When the time is right, they plan to take it to the Supreme Court. Annie Laurie's husband and co-president is Dan Barker. Dan started out in religion as a full-on, born-again, fundamentalist preacher. The story of how he became an atheist and joined the FFRF is nothing less than a hero's journey.
I was very conservative, Bible-believing, born-again, evangelical, charismatic, if you know what that means, all of the gifts of the Spirit and all of that. But in my preaching, I was not one of these yelling type. I was sort of calm and relaxed, and here's what the gospel says, and I trusted that the Word of God would do the work without a bunch of loud theatrics. But somewhere around the age of 30, when I was doing cross-country evangelism because of my Christian music, I started meeting not just pastors in churches that were the same theology as me. I started meeting more moderate and even some liberal preachers as I was traveling around. I talked with hundreds of pastors. And so there was a migration that started within Christianity. I thought it was a spiritual growth of becoming more sophisticated and more mature. And I remember an early thing that happened was when a pastor of a church, before the meeting, we were praying in his office that God would bless my ministry as I was a visiting minister at his church. And he said there were some people in his church who didn't think Adam and Eve were actual historical people. They thought Adam and Eve was more of a metaphor or a parable, just like Jesus told parables of the prodigal son and the Good Samaritan, never intending people to think there actually was a prodigal son or a Good Samaritan. These were stories that were told to illustrate an important moral or spiritual truth. And this pastor had members of his congregation who thought that the early Israelites did the same thing with the Adam and Eve story. They never intended it to be literal people. It was a parable that was told. Now, I remember thinking, whoa, there's Christians who actually think that? And I thought Adam and Eve were actual people. But these people, the pastor told me, they said, we know from science and evolution is there could not have been a first father and a first mother. That's impossible. And even if there had been, they would have come out of Africa, not out of the Middle East, some Garden of Eden. And I remember thinking, boy, that's heresy.
Dan gains serious credibility about things religious because he has a deep knowledge of the Bible and Christian theology. What I also appreciate about Dan is that while he is crystal clear on his positions, he doesn't harangue believers to give up their belief in God. This was especially true in his own family.
And my Christian wife at the time, to her credit, she was and remains a conservative believing Christian. To her credit, she tried to bend because I was her Christian husband and she was a helpmeet to her husband, but she couldn't bend too far without breaking, it turned out, and she wanted to be a minister's wife, and so that was the primary cause of us agreeing that we would divorce and split up, which was painful, it was horrible. So that ended. Of course, we're still good friends. We have the kids and the grandkids and all that.
Are the kids Christians or what?
So the children are all over the place. A couple of them, I would say, are outright atheists and freethinkers. A couple of them are what you might call moderate or liberal believers. I think one of my daughters is a bit of a kind of new agey, you know. But when we get together, that doesn't matter. We don't talk about those things. We all love each other. Fortunately, we all have a good relationship in the family, and there's no shunning or excommunication or no preaching at each other. In fact, eventually, my mom and dad, who were both strong Christians, and mom was a Sunday school teacher and dad was a lay minister, they both became atheists too after a while, after I did. So in my family, I feel kind of lucky that we all love each other first, in spite of the fact that Jesus said, if you want to be my disciple, you must hate your family, what he said. We never took that verse that seriously. We think family is more important than dogma.
Wow.
My mom and dad both said after I announced my atheism, they were shocked. But they said, well, this is Danny, and we know him and we love him, and let's at least talk about it. And after a while, the talking led to them also, you know, rejecting the supernatural. I do have one brother. I have two brothers, but one of the two brothers I have is still a born-again Christian, Tom. He's a great guy. He's really just a fun brother. And we call him the white sheep of the family because the whole family became atheists except him. He stayed. When he and I get together, we rarely talk about any religion. Why do that? Why have a fight among your family? So I suspect that he's praying for us, and that's fine. That's his life, but it doesn't really affect our basic interaction.
On the lighter side, I've always enjoyed making fun of religion. Here's an example from the Freedom From Religion newsletter. Top 10 reasons why beer is better than religion. 10. No one will kill you for not drinking beer. 9. Beer doesn't tell you how to have sex. 8. Beer has never caused a major war. 7. They don't force beer on minors who can't think for themselves. 6. When you have a beer, you don't knock on other people's doors trying to give it away. 5. Nobody has ever been burned at the stake, hanged, or tortured over his or her brand of beer. 4. You don't have to wait 2,000 years for your second beer. 3. There are laws saying beer labels can't lie to you. 2. You can prove you had a beer. 1. If you had devoted your life to beer, there are groups to help you stop. A Baptist minister friend of mine, Donna Mae Smith, sent me this choice piece of insight. In my mature years, I'm finally beginning to understand the Bible. For those who haven't heard, the state of Washington just passed two laws legalizing, 1, same-sex marriage, and 2, marijuana. The fact that same-sex marriage and marijuana were legalized on the same day makes perfect biblical sense, because Leviticus 20:13 says, if a man lies with another man, they should be stoned. I just hadn't interpreted it correctly. 10 Tales of a Fake Minister. A few years ago, I performed a marriage ceremony for my old friend Don Schaller's son, Kane. It was great fun. I went online and bought a $25 license from the Universal Life Church. I went to a church supply store and bought a black robe and a sash. My signature on the marriage license was considered legitimate. The 300 people attending the ceremony at Squaw Valley thought I was the real deal. This is outrageous and dangerous. With a store-bought black robe and a sash, all of a sudden I'm legitimate. What nonsense. By tradition, clergy are not state licensed, as are psychiatrists, psychologists, doctors, electricians, nurses, cosmetologists, counselors, marriage and family therapists, building contractors, etc., etc. For example, I have a PhD in psychology, but I can't legitimately practice psychotherapy because I don't have a license. To get a license, I would need to go through a lengthy process of training and pass rigorous state exams, including supervision by licensed psychologists. Since psychologists do have a variety of things they do, like research, consulting, and writing, teaching, I can call myself a psychologist, but not one that can do therapy. Buy me a beer, though, and I'll tell you how to solve life's problems. I just won't call it therapy. But as a Universal Life Church minister, I surely can do pastoral counseling. So what the hell's the difference? Let's not forget that Jim Jones was an ordained minister of the Disciples of Christ Church. He was not licensed by the state. I'm not saying that if Jones had been certified by the state of California, the Jonestown disaster would not have happened. After all, there are lots of cases where licensed therapists of all kinds go off the rails and do weird things and awful things, like having sex with patients, forming cults, and scamming people out of their money. I am suggesting that if people like Jim Jones, David Koresh, and Marshall Applewhite of Heaven's Gate had to keep their licenses current, like therapists and realtors and hairstylists do, maybe they could have been reined in. Many people are lost and gullible. A smart guy with a robe and a white collar and a sash can do his will.
God has given me, Reverend Rick, the light to see what my sheep need to get into heaven. Look at my robe. Look at my sash. Look at these silly gestures I'm making. For you to find eternal bliss, you need to give me 25% of your net worth. Trust me, I am a man of the cloth.
So what I'm saying here is that maybe it's time for us to change this tradition and start requiring clergy to have state licenses. My contempt for religion. The march of science for the past 500 years, and especially the last century, has made the tenets of Christianity and the Bible harder for people to believe in. Science has answered the questions our ancestors had no way of knowing. They made up stories to explain the mysteries around them, understandable, but no longer necessary. Noah's Ark, the Exodus, Jonah in the belly of the whale, the Last Supper, original sin, Moses coming down from the mountain with the Ten Commandments, the Immaculate Conception, the wise men, the promise of eternal life, heaven and hell, the list goes on and on. All pretend never happened, don't exist. Many historians of religion today don't just think that Jesus was just human and not divine, but that he never lived at all. The whole story was made up in Rome to control the uprisings in the Middle East. In fact, many sociologists and economists think that the real purpose of religion today is to make the working poor go to work every day.
Hey, I know you have a really shitty life working for me in the fields. Just remember, though, that Jesus said, "The meek shall inherit the earth." Well, you're the meek, so you work for me. Heaven, Jesus, and God await you in the next life. So go on singing your gospel songs Sundays, but today, get back to work.
Just as children can be made to believe the myth of Santa Claus, pre-science, primitive peoples believed farcical, nonsensical stories to explain their lives. When their senses contradicted beliefs, they made up stories. For example, when Greeks journeyed to the top of Mount Olympus and found no gods, they concluded that in the presence of humans, gods become invisible. Magical thinking. The backfire effect. Psychologists have discovered something in our belief systems called the backfire effect. This says that when people are confronted with a contradiction to their belief systems that could make them wrong, they most likely will double down on that belief. Say, for example, when Dan Barker heard that maybe Adam and Eve were not real people, and that modern science proves that the human race could not have evolved from just these two mythical people, his faith could have become even stronger, not wanting to be wrong. Some people do that, not Dan. I recently met a retired professor of theology at a party. He told me that his expertise was in the Bible. I asked, "What proof do you have?" He said, "Oral history." I stifled a guffaw. The human memory is more like a sieve than a photograph. When I hear someone quoting Jesus, I have to laugh. Really? Did someone write it down? Only 3% of the population of the Middle East were literate 2,000 years ago. Probably those were the clergy. And the scribes were religious fanatics. Any chance they made stuff up? I'd bet on it. Or let's say that somebody wrote down Jesus' words. Who saved them for 2,000 years? And in what format? What language? The whole concept is ridiculous. Hell, we can't even figure out what happened in Daly Plaza in Dallas, Texas on November 22, 1963, with hundreds of people watching and cameras rolling. And by the way, who's invested in keeping the Jesus myth alive? Maybe it's the church industrial complex. All the books and the magazines and the movies that are made. A lot of people are invested in this idea. Interesting to think about. The role of religion in government. Ben Carson, one of Trump's cabinet members, recently said that we should never have a Muslim president. The Establishment Clause of Article 6 of the First Amendment of the Constitution states clearly that religion should never be a requirement for or a reason of exclusion for any state or federal office. So Carson is dead wrong for wanting to exclude somebody because of their faith. This discussion reminds me of the birther uproar around Barack Obama and whether or not he was actually a legitimate president. In addition to the Establishment Clause, the law is very clear on this. A child born to an American mother while living in a foreign country is an American citizen, period. Therefore, Barack Obama could be a Muslim born in Kenya and still be a legitimate American president. But beyond all this, the whole concept is absurd. Can you imagine a seriously Muslim president with a prayer rug, stopping in the middle of meetings 5 times a day to pray and kneel down facing Mecca? Or how about a female Secretary of State in a full burqa covered from head to toe? This is not illegal. It is not outlawed by the Constitution. It is just preposterous. But wait, there's more. Could we have an Amish president? Of course. The Constitution has no religious litmus test for the highest office in the land. So our Amish president would not use electricity or ride in cars because those things were not in the Bible. Oh, wait, here he comes down Pennsylvania Avenue in his horse-drawn buggy. What about an observant Jew? Consider Joe Lieberman, who ran for vice president in 2000. According to his religion, he would not be able to touch light switches on Saturday. Really? How about a fundamentalist Christian in the White House? For example, Mike Huckabee. Suddenly, we'd have creationism taught in the schools. We'd be doing even less for global warming because, after all, it is in God's hands. Women would have zero access to abortion, and Planned Parenthood would be a distant memory. It would be okay for state and local bureaucrats to refuse service to people because of their deeply held religious beliefs. Think about Kim Davis in Kentucky refusing a marriage license to a gay couple. Faith-based would be the rule of the day. Perhaps a Christian Scientist president would not seek medical care for his ruptured appendix. He would consult a Christian Science practitioner. They would pray. He would die in office. The list goes on and on. The Constitution clearly states that there is zero, none, zilch, nothing in terms of religious preferences for someone to hold public office. We must continue to fight for the separation of church and state. Bottom line, how about an atheist president? Yes, I understand that this is a Christian nation, but let's keep people's deeply held religious beliefs completely out of government. Science and reason. Our lives have become more comfortable and longer because of science and reason. We live with miracles that the ancients could only have dreamed of, including the kings and queens. Things like indoor plumbing, electric lights, the internet, modern medicine and dentistry, trains, planes, and automobiles, infant mortality down, life expectancy up, less physical labor, good nutrition, and of course, video games. Not one bit of this is due to religion, the supernatural, or magical thinking. Nope. All due to the wonders of science building on centuries of learning. Skip the prayers and give me penicillin, indoor plumbing, and a hot shower. When you feel a sharp pain in your side that turns out to be a burst appendix, trust me, you want a modern hospital filled with smart, science-trained experts to fix you up with surgery and antibiotics. What you don't want is a Christian Science practitioner who explains that your pain is due to errors in your thinking because you are created in God's image and cannot be sick. Nor do you want a Catholic priest mumbling Latin incantations over your writhing body. That leads to imminent death. Science lets you return home in 2 days and continue living a long life. These are some of the reasons that people are giving up religion. Also, Christianity's decline has been ascribed to the internet, video games, businesses being open on Sundays, families' stressful lives driving them to crave a leisurely breakfast and pajamas, not getting dressed up on a Sunday morning. In addition, the basic story no longer appeals to the next generation. After World War II, perhaps young people could imagine an invisible God up in the sky, like Santa Claus, all-knowing and keeping records of our sins. This is going on your permanent record. But today, with the ease of worldwide travel, greater scientific literacy, the Hubble telescope, where is heaven exactly? And the internet, people don't believe the biblical account of why we are here. It just doesn't make sense. For example, the Human Genome Project shows that our DNA dates back to single-cell organisms, not some first parents like Adam and Eve. Unfortunately, reason does not drive belief or change minds. Nevertheless, with the crush of science and logic, fewer and fewer people are believing this supernatural nonsense. Christmas. The celebration of Christmas as a religious holiday is on the decline. For example, we don't see religious-based Christmas decorations that much anymore. Look at the front yards in your neighborhood. Lots of Santa Clauses and reindeer and candy canes and wreaths, but no baby Jesus or mangers or wise men. This is because people are moving away from religion altogether. Not just that they want to be politically correct and not insult non-Christians. Years ago, when my daughter Katie was in the first grade, we attended a holiday party with her teacher and the other families in early December. The teacher explained, because of this time of year, she would be talking about the religious meaning of the holidays. She wondered, was everyone okay with that? No, in fact. Slowly the atheists emerged, then the spiritual but not religious people, and then finally the believers. You could feel the tension rising. Then one of the parents, who was Jewish, commented, "Well, in our house, we just celebrate the commercial aspects of Christmas." Everyone cracked up, and the tension broke. Surely that is what is happening today and being reflected in the absence of full-on Christian religious decorations in front yards. Another indicator of this religious decline is the number of TV programs, books, and movies that address the theme, "Was Jesus real?" If we knew for sure and didn't have doubts, these programs wouldn't exist. Hard right Christians are hanging on by their fingernails. The famous Ark Encounter in Kentucky is designed to show people what Noah's Ark might have looked like. It has features of multiple levels and cages where animals lived during the flood. When one tour guide was asked how the Ark could have managed dinosaurs, he thought for a moment and said, baby dinosaurs. This $100 million peon to magical thinking was built with some public funds on some public lands, all of which is unconstitutional. The promise was huge income from tourism. Attendance is only 8% of what was projected. Religion will fade away as people vote with their feet and pocketbooks and no longer attend or donate to churches. Although we still don't know why we are here or why the universe exists, The old Christian myth is clearly nonsense. We will just have to live in the moment with all of this uncertainty. That is all we have because, like the Wizard of Oz, he's just pretend. Science and reason, however, are not pretend. They are real. Proof? Walk over and turn on the light. Now, I have no idea if there's a God, or why we are here, or why the universe exists. But one thing I do know, these silly explanations for all of this that Christianity has been promoting just no longer make sense. The explanations were made up by Iron Age illiterate people to help explain the sometimes chaotic world they lived in. Completely understandable. Modern people, though, have no need for all this nonsense. Science has explained most of these questions. Science tells us how, not why. Maybe we'll find the answer of why when we die. It's unlikely. So the war is over. Science and reason have won. Thank God. I'm just kidding about the God part. P.S. We are lucky to live in a country that protects us from prosecution for writing this kind of article. In Saudi Arabia recently, a man was sentenced to death for blasphemy, being accused of denouncing the Prophet Muhammad. Thank you, Founding Fathers. Open letter to Pope Francis. Here's a letter that I wrote to Pope Francis, though never mailed. Only my blog readers got to see it. Dear Frank, many of my spiritual but not religious friends love you because you wash the feet of the poor and speak out on social issues and warn us about global warming. I'm not impressed. Taking a stand against human-caused global warming 10 years ago would have been amazing. Today it is not. Here are 7 things you could do that would impress me and maybe even turn me into a supporter. 1. Allow priests to marry. Requiring priests to be celibate attracts sexual deviance. This is at the heart of your current problems. All this stuff about zero tolerance and a few bad priests, and they are good but have done a few bad things, is pure bullshit, and you know it. These priests should be turned over to the police and, if found guilty, sent to prison like other child molesters, not sent to another parish. One of your parishioners in New York said, "I believe the Lord is bringing this out so that we can heal. We need to pray for our priests." Really? How's that working for you? Rather than praying for your child-molesting priest, throw them in the slammer. I'll bet you'd have fewer problems. According to Wikipedia, in the U.S. alone, your archdiocese have paid over $1.5 billion in legal fees. Surely this has got your attention. 2. Allow women to become priests. 3. Allow your 1 billion-plus members worldwide to use birth control and have abortions for unwanted pregnancies. Your stance on this has nothing at all to do with the sanctity of life. It is really about having more Catholics. I know you have some concerns about global warming. One solution to the problem is to cut down on the number of carbon-spewing humans on Earth. How many people are kept in abject poverty because of large families they can't care for? Your church's position on birth control is nothing short of a crime against humanity. 4. Open up your finances to the Italian government and the world. 5. Stop promising poor peasants everlasting life in the next world. Help them find a better life in this world. One way to do that is to let them have smaller families. 6. Stop preaching about the virgin birth and the resurrection. As Bill Maher's film Religulous showed, your smartest clergy, the Jesuits, have not believed in that stuff for generations. I'd like to see Christian religion say something like, "You know, these stories about the virgin birth and the resurrection are just metaphors. In addition, it is pretty unlikely there's a heaven or a hell. So let's put our resources into making life on this planet in the here and now as good as it can be." 7. Salvation and everlasting life. I don't know if there is life after death. No one knows. I would bet against it. But I do know that people don't want to die. So we invented religion to give us hope for eternal life. I'd love to see the Catholic Church and all other religions give up this idea of eternal salvation. Let's live for this life, not for some future fantasy of eternal life in paradise. Some say that the purpose of all these promises of heaven and eternity is just a way to keep the enslaved masses from rising up. Makes sense to me. And speaking of dogma, how about this original sin nonsense? When our daughter was born, I held this bundle of joy in my arms and thought, original sin? You gotta be kidding. Now, when she was an adolescent, that's another story. Since Galileo, religion and science have been at odds. Well, Pope Francis, science has won. Magical explanations about how the world works are no longer necessary. Evolution is real. Science is real. The next time you have a rip-roaring infection in your foot because of a rusty nail, try prayer. See how that works. Then try penicillin. Yep, science beats prayer every time. The universe is not pretty. There's no divine plan. The Bible is just a story. Our young people know all this, hence religion has less appeal to them. Instant messaging on my smartphone or go to confession. I choose instant messaging. The latest surveys show a continuing decline in church membership in the United States. Teenagers especially seem to find other things more compelling. I have lots of other suggestions for making your church more in line with today's realities. We can talk anytime. Have your people call my people. Sincerely, Rick. Well, I'm still waiting for the Pope's return call, but I recently saw a quote from him that blew me away. Here's what he said. It is not necessary to believe in God to be a good person. In a way, the traditional notion of God is outdated. One can be spiritual, but not religious. It is not necessary to go to church and give money. For many, nature is church. Some of the best people in history have not believed in God, while some of the worst deeds were done in His name. Wow, think about that. The traditional notion of God is outdated? Amazing! First of all, the idea that there is a notion of God. Our notion of God evolves? There are shades of gray? I thought it was bimodal. Either God exists or He doesn't. Wow. This Pope is an agnostic. Pretty soon he'll be recommending IUDs and condoms. Like the Pope, Dan Barker's theological belief system loosened up over time. In fact, he admits to shades of gray.
So Jesus spoke in parables, and the parables have a message that's not necessarily historical and not actually true. There was no actual prodigal son. That was just a parable. And Adam and Eve then were more like a metaphor for the founding myth for the nation of Israel kind of thing. So the Adam and Eve were a metaphor. Well, then what other characters in this book are metaphorical? What about Yahweh? What about God Himself? Maybe God Himself is just one big figure of speech that the ancient Israelites and the early Christians put together, not really intending it to be true, but it's a story. And I thought, well, you know, well, then maybe Yahweh is also just this fictional device, which means He doesn't really exist as an actual being. And yet I was up talking as if He did, and the audience was responding as if it was real. There was this big dynamic going on. And that got me to really kind of question, well, what is the whole nature of social truth in the first place, or theological truth in the first place?
My own views of religious orthodoxy and all the stories that religions use have gotten more and more rigid over time. I'm much less willing to accept people's belief systems. It seems to me like it's all a bunch of nonsense. However, I am lightening up a little bit on wanting to argue with people about it because it goes nowhere. Recently, I met some Jehovah's Witnesses at a farmer's market in Mountain View, and I got a really strong lesson from one of these women who talked about a difference that she made in someone's life. I was there to take photographs, but it turned out that I learned a really strong lesson about the importance of people reaching out to each other across all kinds of religious divides. Here's how I explained it in a recent show.
This is really an interesting picture. And now, normally, some of you, those of you who know me, realize I don't have a lot of truck with religion. And so whenever I meet somebody like this, I have to get into it with them, right? And explain to them how wrong their views are on the resurrection and the virgin birth. And, you know, and you can imagine how well this goes, you know. But for some reason, on this particular day, I said, I want a photo and I'm part of a class and let's skip all that crap. So I started talking to these women and I said, you know, it must be hard selling religion door to door. And she said something with a nonverbal, and she said, door slamming in my face constantly. Well, has there ever been a time when it went well? And she looked kind of off in the distance. She said, well, a couple of months ago, I knocked on a door, young man answered, and he invited me in. And we sat on his sofa, and for 45 minutes, we talked about Jesus and God and resurrection. And as I was getting to leave, he walked me to the door and then he hugged me. And he said, you would not know this about me, but I'm a veteran and I'm right back from Afghanistan. And my life doesn't mean a hell of a lot and I've been thinking about killing myself. But in talking with you today, I think my life has some purpose and meaning. Thank you. And she looked at me and she said, that's worth an awful lot of door slammings in the face. You know, frankly, I got a hell of a lot more from that than a photograph. Amazing, amazing woman.
After I published this story in my blog, I got a note from my old friend Ray Mayeri praising Jehovah's Witnesses. Here's what he said. I'm as much of a non-believer as you could imagine, but I do consider myself a realist. In regards to the Jehovah's Witnesses I have had the opportunity to work with in business, each has stood out from the crowd in terms of openness, reliability, trustworthiness, you name it. Whatever it is that drives them, if it's positive to others, more power to them. Finally, I'll give Dan Barker the final word on this chapter. I asked him what advice he would have for people who might be struggling with their religious beliefs. Here's what he said.
If you're going through a struggle right now of doubt with your faith and you're reading and you're looking at more than just your prescribed authors, congratulations, first of all, because it's an act of bravery to even consider defying what you thought were authorities in the past. So congratulations for that. In fact, we revere people who are rebels. We live in a country that's proudly rebellious. We fought a revolutionary war. We said no to the authorities. We said no to the sovereign, the king, the monarch, the lord. We said no, we're going to think from, we don't want a top-down country, we want a bottom-up country of we the people. So if you're in that process with your own religion, then congratulations, because you're doing the same thing that the American rebels did. You are questioning the authority of the sovereign and you're saying, wait a minute, how are you to tell me what to think? Why can't I think for myself? That's kind of scary, especially if the sovereign has power over your life. If you lived under a king or under a dictator who would squash dissent and freedom of the press and freedom of speech, your life could be in danger, as we know from history. So thanks for doing that. And I would suggest, trust your thoughts. And in fact, when I was a Christian minister, I would have encouraged that as well. Because God doesn't want robots. I would have preached, God doesn't want you to just say yes because you're scared. God wants you to say yes because you admire and respect and worship him for who he is. And you're making the free decision to do that. So relish your freedom to think for yourself. Take pride in being a rebel in forming your own conclusions. Be open to anything. You might want to go back to the faith. You might want to strengthen your faith in the end. But at least you're making that decision and no one's telling you to do it top down. You're doing it for yourself.
In this discussion of religion, there's some good news. It's the growth of the nuns. we see traditional beliefs being challenged and church membership declining. That says this new generation is giving up the magical, supernatural beliefs of their ancestors and replacing that with a mishmash of humanistic values rooted in this world, not in the sky. The Freedom From Religion Foundation recently had a contest among its members to say it as succinctly as possible. The winner, Randy Udovac, put it this way. My grandparents believed in religion out of superstition. My parents believed out of fear. This nonsense ends with me. In Chapter 9, we saw how sexual mores have loosened up, and here we see how the old religious ideas are fading. All of this has political ramifications, namely toward a more liberal humanism, which brings us to Chapter 11, politics.